This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Camellia, Kelly Anissa and Sumitra Selvaraj. So we're asking you on Twitter today,
would you be open to planting a tree in a public space? And at the moment, we have a resounding 96% of respondents who have said, yes, we need more green, while 3% have said, no, it's not my job. And 1% have said, we have enough trees. And in interest of public disclosure, we have had 77 votes so far. So you're aware of what the sample size is. If you'd like to join the conversation today, do tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call us, if you wish, at 7733-2900.
Yes, so the current climate crisis will create serious disruptions to our ecosystems, economies and society if certain environmental thresholds are crossed. So while reforestation and planting more trees has always been a part of that discussion, a recent study has given us a more accurate number of just how many trees need to be planted. And the answer, as we said earlier, is 1 trillion trees or more.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah, I mean, I still can't wrap my head around what 1 trillion trees looks like. But, you know, the study was published in the journal Science, and it is calculated that over the decades, these trees could suck up to nearly 750 billion tons of heat-trapping carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So that's about as much carbon pollution as humans have spewed in the past 25 years. So according to the co-author of the study, Thomas Crowther, this is said to be one of the most effective and cheapest solutions to climate change. While we know that restoring forests could play a part in tackling this crisis, there was no scientific understanding of what impact this could have made prior to the study.
And there's more than enough room, Swiss scientists say. Even with existing cities and farmland, there's enough space for new trees to cover 9 million square kilometres, and that area is roughly the size of the United States. So there you go. That's your answer, Kelly. That's what so a trillion trees looks like. Just cover the United States in trees.
Yeah, exactly. And
Thomas also added that planting trees is not a substitute for weaning the world of burning oil, coal and gas, a main cause of global warming, and that this method would not work without emission cuts, of course.
So you still need to, you can plant the trees, but you still need to also cut down on our carbon, on our fossil fuel usage, yeah?
Yeah, so it's, it would be redundant if we continue to go the way we're currently going right now. Mm-hmm. So to help us unpack and understand the research better, I spoke to Robin Chasdon. She is a forest ecologist based in the United States. To break it down for us, here is that conversation. So does the type of tree species matter here? I mean, when we talk about planting a trillion trees, can that just be any tree? Or is the type of tree species, is that an integral part in all of this?
Yes, I think the type of trees matters hugely in terms of the outcomes of restoration. Also in terms of the success of restoration and the ultimate survival of the trees and their benefits that they provide. It's not just a question of planting a trillion trees. It really matters what trees are planted. How they're planted is also important. They can also be, a lot of tree species can actually regenerate on their own. The forest can regenerate on their own without having to be planted, which saves a huge amount of money and effort. So I think in many cases, it's important to step back and look at the potential for the forest to recover on its own before going into a massive tree planting campaign. And also the native trees are the ones that really should be given priority if they can be located and grown in local nurseries. Those are the ones that have the better chances of surviving and the ones that the local people are going to want to use.
I see. And when we plant these trees, you know, how long before they start to have that intended effect that the paper discussed, you know, before they are able to absorb the amount of carbon dioxide that that they are supposed to?
Well, when forests are young is when they have the highest capacity to take up carbon dioxide because they're growing very actively and producing a lot of tissues and storage tissues. And that's where the carbon is in the wood. So those benefits start to happen very early on, but the rates of carbon storage are initially rather low. And as the forest gets larger, those rates increase. the total amount of carbon will increase. I think in most of our studies, we have seen very high rates of increase within the first 10 to 20 years of forest regrowth.
10 to 20 years.
Restoration.
So I remember reading that the International Panel on Climate Change had previously warned that we only have about 11 years left to prevent irreversible damage from climate change. So, you know, when it comes to trees, like you said, the time it can take for us to see these benefits can vary from, you know, 10 to even 20 years or more. Do you think it will be too late for this initiative to take place, you know, to plant these trillion trees? Is it too late for that?
I don't think it's too late. I do think that we need to use a variety of approaches, that we can't rely only on the tree's ability to store carbon. We also need to really actively reduce carbon emissions through all kinds of activities, and that has to start now. So I think that what we're learning from our understanding of the natural solutions is that it's a huge complement to what we can do by other interventions, but we must really actively reduce carbon emissions as well.
And, you know, we've spoken about some of the pros of doing this, but what about the cons? How do we weigh, you know, what would be some of the challenges when it comes to implementing this? Is it an actual viable solution to the climate crisis?
Yes, this is a big issue, because even if it is biophysically possible to replenish forest cover across the world, it's not always feasible. There are many economic uses of land already in place. So farmers need to have some alternative sources of income if they're going to give up their agricultural use of the land. And those factors were not taken into account in this study. And we're finding that the socioeconomic aspects of restoration are just as important, if not even more so, than the biophysical ones. There have to be some kinds of compensation for landowners, especially for smallholders who rely on the land for their income and for their sustenance. How are they going to feed their families if they're not growing crops or producing any commercial products? How are they going to receive their income? These are not small questions, and that has to be all part of the equation and part of the planning that goes into restoration. The other issues that come about with increased tree cover are things like potential for increased fire risk and increased utilization of water supplies because of the trees growing. So there can be some situations where increasing tree cover can actually put water supplies, reduce local water supplies, and can create some shorter supplies of water for agriculture.
And, you know, what role can the community play in this?
Well, it's essential that local communities are supporting the restoration activities and that they will receive benefits from it. They're really the source of where the care and the feeding of these forests is going to come from in the long run, because these forests take a long time to grow. So there has to be very, very active engagement of local communities in these activities. And they have to really want the trees to be planted and welcome the kinds of changes that the tree planting will bring for them. Certainly we can do a lot as consumers to reduce the demand for certain commercial products that are causing deforestation. And the biggest one of those globally is beef. The production of beef is often at the expense of forest cover, because the pastures that were created by deforesting areas. And so by reducing beef consumption, we can certainly play an important role in reducing the demand for deforestation. It's important to know the potentials for how we can restore forests in terms of the maximum amount, which is what this paper talks about. But in the end, what really will happen in terms of our ability to replenish these forests is mostly determined by social and economic and also political activities. And these are the sorts of changes that we need to be looking for and working towards.
That was Robin Chaston. She is a forest ecologist based in the United States.
I really enjoyed that. Lots and lots of really important points that were brought up there. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why this is an important initiative is because it can help limit global warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade. For those who might not know about this, in the Paris Agreement, countries agreed that the goal should be to limit warming to below 2 degrees centigrade by
the year 2100.
I had a look at
1,000.
You know what? I had a look at it and I thought, geez, that really sounds like it's really far in the future.
Yes. But I guess not. I mean, when you think about some of the emissions that we are releasing, at least, and I was speaking to someone, an environmentalist recently, and she did say that when you think about, you know, it's not as easy as just planting some trees. It's going to take a really long time and lots of efforts before we actually see or we get to heal the damage that we've done.
Yeah, so in 2100, the year 2100, we're probably not going to be around, but our children probably will be in their golden years.
Exactly.
Yeah. 80, 90 by then, yeah?
It's odd to think that far into the future, isn't it?
Yeah. And so the problem has been that, you know, accurate estimates of just how many trees the world can support, it has been difficult to come by. So six nations with the most room for new trees, you know, for this to take place, Russia, the United States, Canada, Australia, Brazil, and China. So where does that leave Malaysia? So Malaysia absorbs more carbon dioxide than it emits, thanks to, you know, our forests, making it, which makes us a net carbon sink despite its 7.5 tons of carbon emissions per capita. So to put this research into a local perspective, I spoke to Shiro Shikamatsu. He is a natural resource management consultant. Here is a clip from that interview. So you've read the paper. Could you just explain how this will work from a Malaysian context? You know, what role can Malaysia contribute to this? Do we, you know, do we have enough room to plant more trees?
Okay, so in order to achieve the 1.5 degree target, it is also very important to understand that we need to halt the deforestation, because that is as important as to plant the trees. Mm-hmm. And rainforest is very rich in biodiversity and carbon. So if you look at Malaysian forest, it's around 18 million hectares, which is around 55% of land mass. And Malaysian forest is a great carbon sink. So if you look at the 2014 government data, it shows that Malaysia emitted around about 87 million tons of carbon that year, and the forest removed around 73 million tons of it. So the forest removed around 84% of carbon emissions. And the Malaysian government has committed to maintain at least 50% of forest cover. So this commitment was made very early in the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. Mm. So in terms of halting deforestation, it is very important. But I think there's also a lot of opportunities to planting trees. I think, for example, restoring mangrove forests is very important. And in fact, after 2004 tsunami incident, forestry department, with the help of FRIM and the local NGOs, has, I think, restored over 2,600 hectares of coastline. And I think there can be further reforestation through participation of, for example, local coastal villagers. Because some of the abandoned aquaculture ponds can be restored into mangrove forest. Okay, and I think it is important to highlight that such tree planting and forest conservation effort cannot be at the expense of the livelihood of the people, especially the rural people.
I see. And, you know, in one of the studies, the six nations with the most room for new trees are Russia, the US, Canada, Australia, Brazil, and China. So yes. Do you think that, you know, if we were to do some of the things you suggested, does Malaysia have a big role to play in all of this?
Yes. I think, obviously, these countries that you mentioned has a lot of potential for reforestation. But Malaysia also have reforestation potential as well. And as I mentioned, preventing deforestation is also very important for Malaysia. And you should not also forget, it's not just about carbon. We also have to think about biodiversity, because I think there's a recent report telling that the loss of biodiversity is very fast in the IPBES report. So when we consider biodiversity as well, I think conservation and reforestation in Malaysia is very important.
That was Shiro Chikamatsu. He is a natural resource management consultant.
Shall we move the conversation over to WhatsApp? Some of our listeners have been weighing into, and I really quite like what some of them are saying. You know, trees are life-giving. I would plant more trees in the urban setting. We need more of them, and we should reduce tree cutting to completely agree with you there. Mm-hmm. Defo, yes, we need more green lung and trees. You definitely voted yes on our poll.
Yeah.
This man suggests that we should carry water in a pail to water the plants. And you know what? I actually agree with him. You know why? In times of, you know, when there's a bit of a drought or when there's a bit of a dry season, imagine if everybody in the neighborhood kind of took it upon themselves to water the plants that's within maybe a 20 meter radius around the house. Just, you know, as a community effort, just so that
and also get some exercise in.
Yes, yeah. that's
weight training.
We're back on the exercise, aren't we? This is really interesting. The Subang Jaya SS18 residents conducted tree planting exercises some 3 years ago with the support of the city council and councillor, as well as state assemblymen, and allowed the residents, mostly by youth volunteers and key members of the residents association. So today, if you drive around SS18 Subang Jaya, you can see an abundance of trees. Mm. Even those fronting the highway in SS15 were planted by volunteers. More residents should step up and engage the city council to plant saplings, so that in 3 to 5 years' time, more green will emerge in their neighbourhood.
That's true.
Couldn't agree with them more.
Yeah.
This happened in my own neighbourhood as well. When people moved in 7, 8 years ago, when it was first developed, people in the community took it upon themselves to literally plant hundreds of saplings. And we're reaping the benefits of it now. We've also got some comments on Twitter. Muna Arafat says that plant an assortment of herbs like curry leaves, mint, pandan, serai, kaffir, limes, so that the community can work together and reap its produce for their own use, or fruit trees.
Mm-hmm. Or fruit trees.
Or fruit trees.
Which, well, yeah, rambutans and durians. And when they're in season, you can all get free fruits.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They come with rodents as well, but that's a new, different problem to have to deal with.
Prakash says, I'm all for planting trees. However, please ensure that the Majlis Perbandaran is able to maintain. Just to prune a tree, MPS, this is Subang Jaya, I think, is saying that they have a backlog of 2 years of complaints. They should analyse end-to-end requirements. Now, this is a particular area of interest to me, because I think I read a news report a couple of months ago saying, you know, there's actually a lot of study goes into what sort of trees you should be planting. Mm. Saying that we should plant 1 trillion trees is all good, but there are people who actually think about the type of trees that are best suited for our environment. Some trees are have invasive root systems. Mm-hmm. Some trees shed and end up blocking drainage and things like that. So I read that Malaysia doesn't have enough trained arborists. Arborists are tree specialists, basically. And the more arborists that we have in local councils, the more likely you are to have the correct sort of trees planted. And then we'll get to your 1 trillion, Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I suppose, yeah, we need the arborists in as soon as possible, because speed is of essence since the world continues to warm. And then, you know, the... You know, I suppose it will take decades for these new forests to mature and achieve its true potential. By that time, probably not going to be around to enjoy it. But
the next generation will be.
It's always for the next generation.
Plant a, I mean, if you're a homeowner, plant a tree in front. I mean, I know my neighbors do that. They do. They plant their trees in front of their house. So when you walk down my street, you see different types of trees. So you have even have palm trees, like
everyone. Bling.
Yes, everyone
mango.
Has. Exactly. So plant one if you're able to, of course.
All right. So thank you everyone for participating in the conversation. But you can still keep it going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, or you can look us up on Facebook, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcasts on our website, bfm.my/dailydigest, or you can look us up on our BFM app or find us on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. today is Front Row with Sharmila Gunnison. To take you there, here's All the World is Green by Tom Waits, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.